This is Deanna, and our guest today is Lois Letchford, and her website is loisletchford.com. She is the author of Reversed, a memoir. It is available wherever books are sold, and it is about her son, Nicholas, a wonderful individual that has excelled because of the, well, because he was open, and Lois was willing and able and loving enough to teach him in the way that he could learn, and it worked, and he didn't get lost in the wherever children get lost at if they're unable to read, which is a terrible thing to think about. Okay, we will take your calls at 800-313-9443. Now, getting back to one of your students, Christian, you suggested that perhaps they should go to the library. I think library visits are so wonderful. Gosh, a lot of children on vacation or in their free time are maybe watching TV, correct?
Yes.
And you don't learn how to read when you're watching TV.
It's even more than that. Stephen King said, reading is brain food. Reading is thinking. And the TV stops you thinking.
Because you're not interacting with it. When you're reading, you are participating. And that is all the difference. You're just simply being entertained or programmed via TV.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. You might eventually think about something, but yes, you're right. It's an entertainment.
Right. We had a TV when my children were young. We decided we would get rid of it, and I had not realized how much I had depended on the TV to tend to the children while I was fixing dinner or doing laundry or something. And it was quite a revelation to me when we got rid of the TV and what a difference it made. But anyway, tell us a little bit about Christian and the library visits and how it helped him.
Christian would have been 13 years old at that stage, and it would have been our first summer together. So we're working together and we're reading these stories, and we went and started to explore Mount Everest. And so with Mount Everest, you're looking at all sorts of picture books. And we were collecting books and taking them and drooling over these pictures and thinking about what it's like to walk at this ridiculous height where there's lack of oxygen. And one of my books said that, walking in Everest is like breathing through a straw. Mm. And he was just enamored with it. And it was an experience he had never had until he could learn to read and understand all about it. And he went back to his mother and was talking like he'd been to a whole new world. And she was amazed and surprised about the whole experience.
That's
what I remember. Yeah.
Wonderful. Sorry. Wonderful. Mm. Absolutely wonderful. Let's take a phone call. Let's take Sherry in Kansas. Sherry, welcome.
Hi, Deanna.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, y'all were talking about how they can't interact so much when they don't know how to read and how they can't decode things. Deanna, remember when you had James LaFond on about the history of American slavery, and he said reading was the key to a lot of those people to be able to fill out and get out of slavery, especially if they were kidnapped and stuff.
Right.
Pressed into service. Remember that?
Yes. Thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah, that was, anyway, that's all I had, but this is a very interesting show.
Thank you.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. That is true, that people are not able to go beyond their so-called quote-unquote station in life unless they know how to read. And
read.
That's why they and didn't really
want to. And it was at that time, reading was the slaves were not allowed to read because
right.
it was recognized if they read, they would have the power. And
right.
that's why they stopped them from reading. And you know, I bring this into my reading education. When I am teaching students of various races, I attempt to get books where they are in the pictures and the story is about them. And that becomes a critical component of reading, that they are seeing themselves in the text.
Great, wonderful idea.
Yeah.
They can certainly relate much better if they have some relevancy to the imagery in a book.
Yes. And the stories, and they're able to make connections that aren't always available when you're using just a standardized text. Chamamindra Ngozi Adichie. Is that how you say her name? Half a Yellow Sun were her books and a recent one on feminism. She has a podcast on the power of the single story, and it really brought it home to me about the importance of culturally teaching, or teaching appropriately and teaching culturally to our students.
Right.
And in fact,
go ahead.
I grew up with the Dick and Jane books because I'm old now. And I remember wondering who or what these things were on the page because I had no understanding for these people who were immaculately dressed in coats and shoes and socks and cats that are running and dogs that are running, because we grew up on a farm and my parents were dairy farmers morning and night, and our animals were working animals. So for me, it was a, what's happening here? I mean, where does this happen? So it's very interesting that that was my personal experience of learning as well. It was an alienating experience. It wasn't a positive experience.
Yes, you do talk about your family, and when you almost drowned when you decided to jump into the water and went under.
That was scary. Yes. That was scary.
I can understand your point there. And if you don't, if you can't relate to what you're reading, it's certainly not going to be an impact on your life. Wow. Now, as Christian overcame his struggles, and he went to a Bible class. Tell us a little bit about that.
He went to his church, and it would have been at the end of the summer. And he had a new teacher who didn't know him from anyone and asked him to read a passage from the Bible.
Oops.
And he had the confidence to stand up and to do it. And he came back with such a smile on his face. Mum, I did it. I was able to do it.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. It was a big deal. And, you know, that he had the confidence to say, I can, and I did, and she didn't know I had a problem with reading, and once that would have just destroyed me, but I read it slowly, but I read it. And doing those sort of things publicly is a huge deal for children.
It's a huge deal even for good readers to stand up and read anything.
Yes.
Wow.
I've got my pussycat sitting beside me and he's attacking me.
Ah, I have a cat-free office and I close the door. Otherwise, they would be, I have two male cats. One of them is a narcissistic cat. He thinks that the world revolves around him. Yes. And he would be on the desk, sitting on the keyboard. He would be stealing things off the desk, meowing loudly. It would be, it would not be a good experience. But but he would enjoy
it. It's wonderful to have them.
It is. It is. Cats are wonderful little companions. All righty. Now, what are some of the other things that you have employed in your teaching methods that have been very effective and have really helped? We've talked about the poetry. And the cultural differences, which I think is incredibly important, not just the cultural difference, not just national differences or differences in ethnicity. That's important.
It is important. You know, it is making it, I think it goes back to all the time making the connections with the students and letting them see that you are taking them from where they are and not from where you want them to be. So when they can't do something, you don't have an explosion. It's, they can't do this. How am I going to teach it in a way that will engage them? And that's different than standardized reading programs where you just hand it out and the child is going to do this. So that is key, that I'm always looking at the two steps. What do I have to do and how am I going to do it? And then they've got the third and more, almost the most critical part, is what material am I going to use if I've done a lesson or an activity? What material will I engage them in? Mm-hmm. And that is the most challenging part, is finding books at their level, at their interest, with the right number of words on the page so it's not overwhelming, and the right number of characters. All of that is the most difficult part of the job. So I have to read and read and read and read to make sure I've got things that I think they will enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Agree. The other thing, too, before TV became a really big thing, where parents used it for babysitting purposes and whatnot, children read more, and children read comic books. At least I did. I had so many comic books, and I read all the time, just all the time. I always had a comic book in my hand, and that made it easier to graduate to other books that were more involved. And of course you have the illustration in the comic books. And so when you grow up in a family of readers, and my mother says, oh, your dad always has his face in a book. And that was true.
Yeah.
He read all the time. When he probably shouldn't have been reading, paying more attention, according to my mother, to the family, he was reading. And so, I grew up with a family that really appreciated reading, and I've just always been a reader. In fact, that is my favorite way of learning. I think that people can learn to do absolutely anything from a book, including cake decorating, even things that talents like that, where they can read the directions and apply those directions and create something, whether you're talking about quilting or cake decorating or something like that. I think that you can, cookbooks, you can learn to be a great cook using a cookbook. And it just galls me when I see these TV ads that talk about that they're going to send you this box of food. And what is that all about? People can't, yeah.
Well,
can't
I,
read a cookbook. Go ahead.
I can say to you that I am jealous of you. And I am jealous of people like my husband because you both grew up in a household with books and you could read with ease and you knew how to access them. I grew up reading words. And because I could read words and I couldn't comprehend, well, the teacher said, well, she's not very smart. And every time I picked up a book, it was a huge physical effort for me to read. And that's what I remember of reading as a child. And I hated comic books. I still don't
really?
Like them.
Oh, they were just the best. I graduated from comic books to other things, but that was...
They're huge.
Or what about nursery rhymes? I always read to my children. I read to my children when they were 3 months old. I would read to them.
Yes.
Because I felt that the soothing voice and they yes. developed a love of reading from the crib up.
Yes.
It
yes.
just
well,
and we went to the library every other day.
Yes. I didn't have that experience. My personal experience was not like that at all because my parents were busy putting food on the table.
Right,
and
they were
had no
milking
money.
Cows and all that other stuff.
Yes. Morning and night, and we had no money for books, and my mother was not a reader. My father was the reader, but not my mother. My mother's strength was in sewing and the ability to imagine a dress in her mind, draw the pattern, cut it out and make it. And that was her strength, her visual strength.
Wow.
But she's...
That's good.
She only became a reader later on in life too. Mainly due to books on CD again when she was with us. So, yes, so it was quite a switch for me. And I think when I come to teaching reading, my own background plays a role because I did grow up with just reading words. And so when I read the research about what else goes wrong in the reading process, I'm going back to my background and thinking, well, what did go wrong? What did happen? And it's interesting you say about recipes. I remember I would have been about 10 or 11 years old, and my mother said, yes, we're going to bake a cake. And the recipe said, cream the butter and the sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to my mother, Mum, I need some cream.
Oh,
now I can tell you why that was a problem.
Well, it sounds logical if you're not used to reading a cookbook.
Well, it's also the language component that
right.
words have multiple meaning. And,
you grew up on a dairy farm. What else are you going to think of other than it's cream, right?
That's right. Unless someone says to you, putting butter and sugar together becomes cream, and we call it creaming butter and sugar. And this word has multiple meanings.
Right.
I did think, yes, and that's how I remember learning to read with recipes. Cream the butter and sugar.
Right.
Cream. Mum, I need cream.
Now, there was a program teaching your baby how to read. And my husband and I had adopted a child. There were 11 years difference between our last child, our daughter, and this adopted child. Okay, we'll be right back.
Okay.
So stay with us.
Have you had enough to eat? You haven't finished.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
All righty, we are back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Lois Letchford, and her website is loisletchford.com. She is the author of Reversed, a memoir, and it is a must-read book. If you have anything to do with children, which we all do, in some one way or another. But anyway, we adopted this child. She was an out of culture adoption. She was born with fetal alcohol syndrome, and she came to us at the age of 5 months. And I wanted to give her every advantage that I possibly could so that she could overcome the situation into which she was born. And so I purchased this book. It was called How to Teach Your Baby How to Read. And that book is actually still available. And what I did was I labeled everything in the house.
Everything. Yes.
Refrigerator. Everything that I could. I put a great big label on everything. And we played school every day. Every day we played school, and I think that it helped her, and in the long run, I hope that it helped her, and later on she was able to develop great piano skills because I think that when you learn to read, that it affects your other skills, physical skills. So I think that we should do what we can with our children, as you have done, to give them the appropriate lessons, the appropriate information. And whether you're reading to your child when they're in the crib at 3 months, or designing flashcards, which came with, I believe I also bought a kit that went with the book, and it was fun, and it brought us closer together as a mother and child.
I did the same thing with Nicholas, named everything in the house, so it's being a name for him. Yes. I think now I would do it in a sentence, not just a name.
Ah.
So that you're doing, this is a refrigerator.
Better
this
idea.
Is a chair. Yes. Because we don't read isolated words. We read everything in a sentence.
How true. That is so true. Yes. That is a much better.
And then you. Yeah. And then you're dealing with. The problems with children who struggle are these tense things too. The is, are, was, were. And mm-hmm. so you're also dealing with that. So if you've got a sentence there, this is the refrigerator, they get to know that is means now. Because you don't say this was a refrigerator.
Right.
So it's very important that you do those things. And it's, a lot of my work actually comes from speech therapy. There's an overlap between speech therapy and what I do. And when Nicholas was in speech, we did a lot of work with the tense. Just oral language. We are walking down the street. Mm-hmm. We, and then we would stop. Or, and then you start with, we were walking. And they need to hear that oral language so much more to help them with their learning. Because a lot of my students, even now, older students, I ask them to give me a sentence with the word were, we were, W-E-R-E, and W-H-E-R-E, and they struggle with it, even though they're two entirely different words. The were is a tough one.
Right.
Unless they're really good with language. Skilled children who have no problems with learning and learning to read, know these things. The children who are sitting on the borders of language difficulties, whether they've got a label or not, whether they're dyslexic or learning disabled, they struggle with some of these language tasks that you would expect them to be fairly easy with.
Mm-hmm. Even singular and plural.
Yes. Yes.
Okay,
even
can
singular and plural. And it changes too, doesn't it? It's not consistent. I was, we were.
Right.
And then with the younger students, they start, we was. Oh, no, that's not right. And you see their brain really clicking over and thinking, oh, what is it? I was on the slippery slide. We were. And it takes a lot of practice and takes a lot of hearing to get that language right.
The other thing that has become a problem, I believe, is the disintegration of the language through texting and social media, where LOL, lots of laughs, it's disintegrating the language, where people, particularly younger people, are losing their ability to communicate because they're not doing it properly. What I would consider properly, they are. Okay, we will be right back. You're quite a trooper. Stay with me for the whole 3 hours. Bless your heart. Okay, we'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
February is Heart Month. Every year for the month of February, to show our appreciation to Extendivite's faithful customers, we have a sale. If you would like to try Extendivite, now is the time to get a few months ahead and really give Extendivite the time to show you how it works. Most of Extendivite's long-term customers wait for this sale to stock up. People and doctors tell us about the unbelievable improvements that they have experienced in their overall health, not just the heart. Extendivite wants you to experience the power of these herbs. Get a 4-month supply for only $115 for either the capsules or tincture. Please take advantage of this once per year sale and get healthy for life. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good.
All righty, we are back. Our guest today is Lois Letchford. Her website is loisletchford.com. She is the author of Reversed, a memoir. And we were talking about the disintegration of the
language. And I'm chuckling. I am laughing.
Why is that?
Well, we think that language is static, and we think it's always been the same.
Oh.
But I've come to believe that language, we, the people, are the drivers of the language. And language evolves. The language that we had 150 and 200 and 300 years ago would have been saying exactly the same as what you're saying. This language is deteriorating. People can't spell correctly and. But we, the people, drive the language. And as technology comes in and all sorts of things, language changes and evolves. It's not static. So it's just another evolution of language. That's my take on it.
Oh, and you're right. But I do hate to see the technology disadvantage young people to the point that they can't even write a paragraph, or they can't get through a paragraph without saying, or speaking a paragraph without saying, like. Have you ever heard someone say, like...
Yes, I've heard this change, yes, that it's, you know, coming then from language into the written language and the oral language, and they can't even speak in the end. Yes, I've heard that.
Right.
But, you know, I think we are continually, there will always be the academic language, but it's language of the people will change. Sorry, I missed that.
That is so unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's the way it goes, isn't it? You know, you look at the way English has grown up and American English has grown up, and they spell things just a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
And why that's happened. And, you know, 200 years ago when I was dealing with Nicholas and Captain Cook, and you can see all these things online now, how he was spelling and how there mm-hmm. was no ED at the time on anything. So there's, you know, and it's hard to read things that are older because of the language and the way it was written at those times.
Right.
And even now books are written in a different style than they were 20 or 30 years ago. And, you know, some of them are even harder to read because that style of language has moved on. And you have to think more about what they're writing about.
Right. They also... they do not teach cursive in school anymore, which is very disturbing to me. Or if they're teaching it, they're not teaching it the way that I learned it. And I think that's really sad. I think it's a great disadvantage. And the other thing that really irritates me to no end, when a presenter or somebody is talking to a mixed group of people, females and males, to say something like, "you guys." Or when I'm in a restaurant, and the waiter comes up and there's two ladies sitting there, and he says, "What would you guys like to have?" And I have actually said, "I do not see any men here. We are ladies." Anyway, that's just
the colloquialisms, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Yeah. So tell me how you came about writing the book. It was a challenge for you, correct?
Oh, enormous challenge. Enormous challenge. Yes. Yes.
Well, tell us
about... My husband moved, and we were, you know, we've been across this Pacific Ocean too many times, and we moved to upstate New York. And I cannot teach in upstate New York. So I finished my master's degree in literacy, which I thoroughly enjoyed doing, but I didn't want to do any more study because it was just too stressful. Someone said, "Well, what would you like to do?" And I said, I'd really like to write up Nicholas's story. Because at that time, Nicholas had just completed an honors degree in mathematics and engineering. He hadn't started a PhD program yet. So coming to that and getting honors degrees was a huge step, and I just thought, I want to write my story up. And so what I did was, for the next 6 months, I just sat down and wrote the story out. And what I wrote initially was what the book ended up being, because it follows a pattern. It follows the story of over the years and what countries we were in. But I knew it wasn't good enough. And so I started to go to writing classes. And the first class I went to, I shared one of my stories, and someone said, "Well, you've got the tense wrong."
Oh.
And, you know, I still remember it, don't I? "You got the tense wrong."
Yes. See how that works? Yes.
Yeah. And anyway, I stuck at it. But then I went to another writing class, and there was a young girl there, and we were asked to edit people's works. And she edited, I think she edited everyone's the same. Her edits were incredible. And she said to me, "If you ever want to do any work, let me know." Because she trained as an editor, and she was just doing odd jobs at the time. And I got in touch with her, and she helped me enormously. She actually helped me, taught me to write. She edited my work. we worked on that first chapter, which started as about 5 pages, and then it ended up being 20 pages, and we knew we had to do something about it. And she was phenomenal. And she was the one who said, every person in your book has to be a character. They've got to have characteristics, and this is the way you've got to write it. And that's how the book came about. And it really came about because of her support. I could not have written that book independently. And it comes from two reasons. Because I do have a learning disability. I live with it. And then on top of that, you haven't had the practice you need to become a successful writer. So in the last 3 years, I've been writing and writing and writing.
Wonderful. Your book is wonderful. And the development of the people that you talk about, you feel like you know them as a complete person, because you filled out their characteristics and their problems and the solutions to those problems and how they worked it out, how they felt. You've included what they did, how they felt about what they did, their success. I would say that's really remarkable.
And the other component of my book is the structure. You know, you start off, it's really sad at the beginning. And that whole first year is sad. And then you meet Rob Cusack, so everyone gets a lift. Then there's a positive in grade two. And then we go to England, and my luggage falls apart. So there's humour.
Yes.
And then we...
That's not too funny when it happens.
My poor mother, I should have put a bit more about her. Mortified. And then... You know, then there's the failure, my failure with Nicholas again. So the emotion is you're going down, and then there's the success. You know, and then you follow it with, he's the worst child I've seen in 20 years of teaching, which comes right in the middle of the book, which you don't expect. So that makes it, you know, everyone's with you then. And from there on, it's an uphill ride. You know, you're getting better and better and better, and the book's going along nicely and smoothly, until Nicholas then goes to junior high, and then you've got that teacher being mean and nasty, and you're slapped down again. So, and then you have to, the book picks up again, and everyone feels the strength and the work that he did to achieve. But so his life was like that, and so the book was able to follow the ups and downs. And so I really am pleased that the book has come out as well as it has, with all of those emotions that people connect with.
Right, and people do, well, at least I did, really connect to what you're feeling and your sadness, but also your triumphs. And poor Nicholas, his character is so well developed, and so I did shed tears over his first grade experience.
Yes.
I could not help it, because it was just so well written. And
Thank you.
It was. It broke my heart to read about his experience. And what does he think about the book?
There's a video clip of him talking about the book and me, and he says, my mum is inspirational. He will not read the book. We've read parts to him, and his wife has read it all, but he won't read the book because of just what you said. It's too emotional, and it's too hard for him to go back and read it.
I understand. He couldn't... He lived it. He doesn't have to read the book.
He lived it. That's exactly what he says. I lived it. And, you know, when I was talking to him about various things, I remember he was talking to him. He's in a PhD program, and I'm talking to him about the experience in the junior high when the teacher was nasty to him. Mm-hmm. Day one, period one. of a new school. And Nicholas burst into tears. And he's trying to cover his tears with laughter and thinking about all the teachers who were wonderful to him and all the wonderful experience. And then he would sob again, thinking about that day. These days impact our children forever. We can't take them away. We can't lessen them. I think they lessen over time and you don't think about them. But when he does think about it, it's soul destroying.
Exactly.
And the other person... Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah?
Go ahead.
The other person I talked to him about recently was, you know, who do you remember from your elementary school, from the early years? And he said, I don't remember my first grade teacher or my second grade teacher. Don't remember. I remember Mrs. Raspaskowski, and I remember Mrs. Hinksman. And he called them by name and such positive experiences with them. I don't remember that other person. Nicholas, I said, what about your reading teacher? And he sat there and he said, did I have a reading teacher? I said, Nicholas, you were with this reading teacher 4 days a week, half an hour a day, one-on-one for about 4 years. He goes, my reading teacher. Ah, my reading teacher. He says, she was a witch. Have I lost you?
I'm sorry, you cut out. Yes, you cut out. What was she? He said she was a witch. Oh,
she
yes.
was a witch.
Yes.
And that's his memory. And so when teachers are working with students, it's really good to think, what will this kid think of me in 20 years' time? I think it's a sobering reflection. What will they remember?
Well... he was certainly accurate when he did remember. And no wonder he didn't recall immediately. It was such a bad...
Yes, that's right.
A bad experience. Oh.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Gosh.
And I didn't know that. That's what I would say. I didn't know.
Right.
So, and you only learn these things as children get older and you do reflect, and because his experience has been such a, you know, dramatic change. And I think we underestimate children that are struggling, their depth and their emotion and what they are learning.
Right. But children remember. And he does have a phenomenal memory. So he probably remembers every terrible thing that any teacher ever said to him.
Yes. Well, you know, he's tried to hide it, and it's buried somewhere in his memory, but he really doesn't want to open that cabinet.
Of course
because
not.
Because I think exactly what you said. Yes. Yeah. So it's certainly been a learning experience, even looking at it from this end for me. I have been surprised at how much or how little he said, and then when you do talk about it, you know, he just dissolves into tears. Or then the story, you know, with the poetry with me, you've got the other child, the one that was happy and excited about learning. So
we've got
a big job to do as teachers. It's more than just teaching children to read.
That is
so
true.
We can't measure that.
No. Now, when he went away to school, and in your prologue you write about this, and I can tell just the way that you phrased it, that you're still concerned, overly concerned, and you say, pacing the carpeted floor of my home in upstate New York, I await an email, a message, or a Skype call. Anything. I think Nicholas should have contacted me by now. I know my son had walked into his oral examination, known as a VIVA, at the same time I woke up. It was noon, at his university in Oxford, 7 a.m. in the States. And you just waited and waited.
And waited.
And then he did contact you. Yeah. But you say the clock ticks away painfully slow. Isn't that beautiful writing? A text message comes through from Nicholas's girlfriend. Okay, we'll pick this up on the other side. We'll be right back.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 today.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
When your doctor tells you you have bad cholesterol or blockages in the arteries, what do you do? When diet and exercise is not enough, we try medications and hope for the best. For the last 2 decades, I have been telling people about a natural method to help solve these problems and more. Extendovite can help maintain cardiovascular health and lower blood lipid levels in adults. The 7 herbs in Extendovite are known to work together synergistically to get the results we hope for. There are many testimonials on Extendovite's effect on circulatory-related ailments. Get Extendovite today to start your journey back to a healthier life. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or see us on amazon.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Are back with our guest Lois Letchford, and her website is loisletchford.com, and you're waiting to hear from Nicholas, and you're waiting to hear from Nicholas, and you're waiting and waiting, and you're getting worried. So tell us, pick up the story from there.
Well, there's nothing you can do but wait, is there?
Yes.
And what had actually happened was that he had done 5 hours of questioning. Now, when you do a PhD exam in Oxford, the student, the PhD candidate, sits in a room with 2 or 3 other experts, and they go through each page of your thesis. the 200 pages or whatever it is, and mm-hmm. they pull it to pieces and do whatever. So he did 5 hours of questioning. He said, I explained to them at the beginning, or he had paperwork to say he has dyslexia, he has a learning difficulty, and he would have a break every hour.
So oh,
that
okay.
helped him. But, and then they do that. They did their 5 hours, and then he goes out of the room, and the examiners discuss the thesis. Is it good enough? Is it not good enough? And when he... that 20 minutes feels like forever. And they came back and said, yes, it's okay, but he had some changes to do. But then after that, he called his girlfriend and talked to her for a while, and there were other things. So I was the last on the list.
Eventually
call me and say yes. And he was exhausted. I know it's incredibly...
Because you can handle the truth.
It's an incredibly long day, and it's a very stressful day. But anyway, he got through it, he made the changes, and he did get a PhD.
Wonderful.
He graduated last May in 2018, and the night before he graduated, my mother-in-law, his grandmother, died, and that was really sad that she... Yes, because she was a huge influence in his life, in our lives. And but she would have known that she had just, you know, she couldn't do any more. So, it was a big deal.
Yes, she transitioned and she's just, she knew, she just transitioned.
Yeah. Wow. So we will all always remember her death.
Yes. Yes. Well, what a fabulous, fabulous story. And, what he said was, he said, I want to jump through the computer and give you an enormous hug. I cry in shame, knowing the incredible fight we faced to reach this moment. Nicholas follows, that is what you said. Nicholas follows with a simple thanks, Mom. Then softly and matter-of-factly, my thesis is completed. You can publish your book now.
Thank you for reading my book and feeling the emotion with it, because you're crying and I'm crying.
Oh, bless your heart. Thank you for being on the program. And my love and hugs to you for being who you are. And my love to Nicholas. Tell him I said hello.
I will do.
Good.
Thank
and
you
good
very
job.
Much.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, listeners. We'll chat next week. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.